Every now and then, in my office, I make the mistake of answering the phone. Let me be clear, it's good luck if it's you calling. It's only bad luck if it's someone prodding me for an answer to the meaning of Unitarian Universalism. They haven't been here yet, but they are curious. What do you believe? What are your services like? The more I say, the more questions I get. So I try to keep my answers brief. And then I say, you know, the best way to get a sense of what it's like and whether you'd feel at home is to visit. You are welcome to visit anytime. Of course, these days, questions like that often come by email. Hello, one writes. I've seen your website. It looks great. Can you tell me more about your congregation? What kind of activities do you have? What are your services like? Really? You've seen the website? How did you miss the tab that says, what to expect on Sunday? Or the one that says, our beliefs? Or the tab that says, explore our activity groups? I don't say this, of course. Instead, I reply, thank you for checking us out. Here are some links that may answer your questions. I hope you will feel free to visit sometime. That is the best way to get a sense of this congregation and Unitarian Universalism. I know that I'm not alone. Many of you, like Kevin, get questions about UUism too. That got me to thinking about the best-selling series, The Complete Idiot's Guidebooks. In a brief, lively, no-nonsense way, these books introduce everything. Physics, philosophy, foreign languages, Tai Chi, natural childbirth, green gardening, Medicare, how to play poker, and if that does not work out, filing for bankruptcy. Their book, The Idiot's Guide to World Religions, is inviting and inclusive in its tone. There are individual guides to Islam, Hinduism, Wiccans, and ancient Aztecs, but none about Unitarian Universalism. So this morning, let's begin making our own version. First, a word about the title of that series, A Complete Idiot's Guide. They use the word idiot to mean someone who does not know much. But in its ancient Greek origin, the word idiot meant someone who does not care to know. In Athenian democracy, an idiot did not care what was going on around them. It was a person characterized by self-centeredness. A person concerned exclusively with private affairs as opposed to matters of the common good. There are some religions or philosophies that promote individualism without a call to heal the world or help others or be generous. Some people say, I'll work on my own spiritual growth and you work on yours and the world will take care of itself. As Unitarian Universalists, we can't say that. We affirm that making things better takes intention and effort and working together. Our religious ancestors fought for political changes, ending slavery and segregation, extending to women the right to vote and own property, establishing public education throughout the country, defending free speech and freedom of religion, and expanding the circle of equality to include lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender persons. We are a religion of this life and this world, made of people and congregations that care about the common good. We believe that we are connected to other people and mutually dependent with other beings on this earth. And that is the opposite of the ancient meaning of an idiot. In an Athenian sense, a complete idiot would not be curious enough to read a guidebook. So leaving that word aside, let us imagine that there would be an audience for our book. What should it look like? First off, I don't think a bound volume would cut it. We have a living tradition. We say that the revelation of truth is continuous and ongoing. Religious truth is not sealed once and for all in a religious hierarchy or in a book of scriptures. By the same token, an explanation of who we are will always be an incomplete guide. So let's make our guidebook in the form of a loose leaf binder. We can add new pages and update old ones. There's a lot of diversity within our faith, not only in each congregation, but across the world. In the Hungarian-speaking communities of Transylvania, Unitarian churches have been around since the late 1500s. In the remote hills of northeastern India, the Khasi Unitarians have been worshiping since 1888. And in the past few decades and even recent years, new groups of Unitarian Universalists have sprung up in the Philippines, Singapore, Sub-Saharan Africa, and Latin America. Unitarian Universalism looks different in each culture. With a loose leaf binder, each church could remove the pages that didn't describe them accurately. We could do the same across this country. Open the binder, insert your own expression of our liberal faith, and put the others to the back. Maybe not throw them away, but give them an index. Imagine how the non-idiot's incomplete guide to Unitarian Universalism could have off-the-chart sales. We could start in our bookstore right across the way. Let's get started making it. What important themes would we put in our binder? I propose to you just the first few chapters. Chapter 1, we're all in this together and separately. We are a congregation-based movement, but every church is independent. Every congregation has its own constitution and bylaws. Each one can have its own mission statement and covenant. A congregation is even free to wander aimlessly without a mission or a covenant. I'm glad that this one has both a mission and a covenant. More than 1,000 congregations in all our UU societies and churches and fellowships freely join together as an association, the UUA. In this association, nobody can tell our church what to do. But that's, at the same time, we cannot rely on a hierarchy to give us easy answers. The Unitarian Universalist Association will not pay for our mistakes or pay for anything we do in Sacramento, for that matter. It is up to us. Indeed, every congregation pays dues to the association. We send money to the denomination to support its work. We support staff and leaders at our Boston headquarters, the headquarters that Kevin never saw when he was growing up there, and staff in 5 regions of the country. Our support makes it possible for leaders of the denomination to speak out on issues of justice, fairness, and freedom in the larger world. From the UUA, we get guidelines on compensation for clergy and staff. We get expert advice on how to do our life in our congregation. We get religious education materials and lots of books for our bookstore here in the library. Every congregation has the right to send voting delegates to a yearly general assembly. At that assembly, delegates make some key decisions of our association. Voting on resolutions about social concerns and business matters, and electing a new president and moderator and board of trustees for the association. These assemblies are what gave us the statement of our UU principles. And this brings us to the next chapter. Chapter 2. Pillars of the faith always under construction. We have no formal creed. There is no statement of belief which a person has to agree to in order to belong to a church. Yet in joining together, our congregations have articulated the values that we share in common. Our seven principles do that. It may be helpful to think of the seven principles as pillars. They are like the building stones which give shape to our UU movement. Number 1 and number 7 are the foundation stones on either side of the archway. Number 1, we affirm the inherent worth of every person. We promote human dignity. This means that no ideology, religious or political, no ideology is more valuable than a person is. No belief system is more important than an individual human being. And in number 7, we affirm that we belong to something larger than ourselves. We live in a web of relationships. Everyone and everything that lives is interconnected and mutually dependent. We belong to one another and to nature, creation, the cosmos, the web, the divine embrace. We are interdependent, and this means we have responsibilities. On these two pillars, number 1 and number 7, stand our other 5 principles, and these have to do with shared responsibilities. Our principles of practice, you might call them. And our principles of practice include using the democratic process and promoting the right of conscience for everyone, encouraging spiritual growth in one another, and pursuing our own growth in a free and responsible search. Our pillars of practice include showing compassion, working for justice and fairness and freedom for everyone. The stone arch of our 7 principles is weighty and strong, yet it's always under construction. The wording may change over time, reflecting fresh insights and more inclusive language. And there's nothing special about having exactly 7 of them. From time to time, a stone may get carved anew. An example is the crafting of that 7th principle, the interdependent web of existence. By voting to adopt that one, our General Assemblies adopted the image of the web as a religious metaphor, a religious term in our tradition. Chapter 3, what about God? Many will ask this question. Every faith believes in a supreme being, right? Well, this is one big distinction about us. We have agnostics and atheists among us, and they are open about it. We have theists too. Some theists like the traditional understandings and language about God, and other theists imagine the divine in a broad way. Here we strive to welcome diversity of belief and bring it out in the open, using respect and curiosity to enrich our time together. A UU church is like an extended family sitting around a Thanksgiving dinner table. A functional family, huh? Not one you might be thinking of. Some of the cousins around the table are monotheists, and others are non-theists, and a handful are polytheists. We are spiritually hungry, and we choose from several offerings: a serving of wisdom from books and the arts, a helping of insight from science, and the seasoning of personal experience and reason. We have prayers and candles and flowers at this table from the pagans to make it a celebration. The Buddha is humble enough to serve the food, showing compassion for all beings. The ancient Jewish prophets are at the table, reminding us that people are going hungry outside our walls. And Jesus of Nazareth is there too, making room and inviting strangers to sit together. And perhaps most important at this table is this. No matter the sources of the spiritual nourishment we might be sharing and enjoying, all spiritual sources remind us to show gratitude for the gifts of life and for all our blessings. Chapter 4. So are you Christian or not? That depends on which one of us you ask. Some are, some are not. It also depends on what you mean by that word. The roots of our UU tradition are embedded in Christianity. In the middle 1500s in Central Europe, not long after the Protestant Reformation had begun, radical Christians were arguing about the nature of Jesus. Was he God? Or was he the Son of God? The early Unitarians there said, "We think Jesus was a man and one who was a prophet of God." In the late 1700s in Massachusetts, Unitarian Christians considered him to be the model human being. His life and words can show us what greatness is possible in the human character. In that same colonial time, and also in New England, early Universalists rejected the unhappy Christian idea of eternal torture in hell. To the Universalists, God was not a cruel tyrant, but a loving creator and an embracing parent. God never stops loving and forgiving. God wants us to be joyful, brave, generous, and loving. Even as many UUs don't identify as Christian these days, and even as many non-Christians are drawn to our spiritual communities, that is our heritage. These values of dignity and love persist in our tradition now. With open hearts, together we strive to listen for those values as they speak through many traditions and faiths and cultures. Chapter 5. Why such a long name? After a century of spreading those values, those radical values of dignity and love, the Unitarians and the Universalists came to see how similar their two denominations had become. Indeed, in the 1860s, California minister Thomas Starr King said the Universalists and the Unitarians were too near of kin to be married. They did eventually get married, but not without a lot of conversations. There was a broken engagement or two, and then cohabitation, or at least cooperation, on religious education curricular materials and continental youth organizations and a shared hymnal. But the legal marriage did take place, and it happened in 1961. Giving us the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations and giving us one of the longest names of any religion. Chapter 6, 7, 8, and 9. These are yet to be written. Maybe I'll do another sermon later on. But as members and friends of a free faith, you should do your part in fleshing them out. Plenty of topics are begging for a page in the guidebook. What does not work for one of you may serve another quite well. Each one of us is on our own free search for meaning and purpose. We share what's on our pages with one another. We speak our truths and we listen to one another. I look to see what inspires you, because I might find it helpful to me, or I might find it helpful for another person. Our individual pages, once collected and once appreciated, can provide wisdom, courage, and hope. So may it be. Blessed be. And amen. And namaste.